I apologize, the screen's over here, so I may look like I'm talking to the right of the audience. I apologize for that. It's a real pleasure to be here. I'm waiting. Paige was kind enough to invite me in to work with her on the symposia three symposia ago, and it's been really an eye-opener and very exciting, I think, for all of us in North Carolina. And last year, the symposium that she was just talking about actually became international in scope and in attendance. So we are excited to be doing this again. Now, what I'm sharing with you today is perhaps a little bit of my own personal journey. I grew up in the United States. I've lived in the United States. I've worked in 50 countries. But when I went to work for UNICEF, there was this term rights, which was really quite foreign. We use the term loosely in the United States to talk about rights. And I really had to study and educate myself on what rights means, a global human right means around the world. My only off-label use of anything is breastfeeding. I have no relationships with commercial interests. I'm going to discuss very briefly the impact of breastfeeding on women's health, some of the policies and programs that support breastfeeding as a right, but mostly I'm going to be talking about what does right mean in the international context. Another disclosure is that my friends and colleagues accuse me of having too many words on slides. I'm going to do it in spades for this talk because there's detailed rhetoric that I have to say I have to read. And I hope you'll come with me on this little journey through this subject matter. Breastfeeding is generally viewed as infant nutrition, and women's issues and women as a part of it is, as Paige was spelling out, has to be viewed in many contexts. Is there any water? Lack of breastfeeding is associated with increased health risks. And you notice I'm saying lack of breastfeeding. We really have to change the rhetoric here as well. It's not that breastfeeding has benefits. How many people believe that breastfeeding? Well, this is a bad crowd. I won't do this thing. But we all believe that breastfeeding has benefits. And if you say that lack of breastfeeding, thanks so much, has risks, already some people are getting nervous. And then if you say formula feeding has risks, people get even more nervous. And then if you say formula feeding kills, people freak entirely. But the fact of the matter is, if we have the dichotomy between the two, lack of exclusive breastfeeding kills in many settings. And we really have to begin looking at breastfeeding as the norm. What can we do to prevent the damage from other forms of feeding? In addition, the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of the Child states very clearly that every child has the right to the best start in life and specifically talks about breastfeeding. So let's look at these concepts together and see if we can make heads or tails out of them. Just very briefly, maternal health outcomes, lack of breastfeeding is associated with many nasty things. Women who don't breastfeed have an increased risk of type 2 diabetes, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and postpartum depression in the meta-analysis that was done by the Agency for Health Research, Healthcare Research and Quality of the United States. So those top four, we can say the U.S. government says so. There's other maternal health benefits of breastfeeding or risks of not breastfeeding, and they include possibly enhanced immune system activity. There's been a few studies over the years, but that hasn't been looked at as an issue in a systematic analysis as far as I know. There's also some hints that the metabolism is more efficient during breastfeeding. Of course, here in the United States, we have plenty of food and calories. Maybe this isn't a good thing. We would like to lose the weight with the breastfeeding, but in areas where nutrients are scarce, it's very good that during breastfeeding you have efficient nutrient metabolism. Certainly, there's modification of calcium metabolism, and for a long time, everybody outside the breastfeeding sphere would say, oh my goodness, if you breastfeed, you're going to lose all that calcium from your bones. What we know is that the osteoclasts and osteoblasts respond to the different hormones of lactation and of weaning.
Can you stand a little bit more? We want to see your slide.
Absolutely. Does this work for most people? Okay. I have to read it too. Actually, this lets me look more at the group. Thank you very much for that suggestion. No, this is fine. This is fine. I've worked in developing countries. These technologies are starting. There's been a couple studies now that show that teenagers who were pregnant and breastfed, if you compare them to teenagers who were never pregnant or teenagers who were pregnant and did not breastfeed, that the teenagers who were pregnant and breastfed ended up in the same bone status, same calcium status as the children, as the teenagers who were never pregnant. So in other words, being pregnant without breastfeeding leads you to a less healthy bone status. There were studies by Ward and Chantry on that issue. And breastfeeding is associated with delayed fertility return. Lack of breastfeeding is associated with increased fertility. And along with that increased fertility, the increased return to ovulation is increased menstrual bleeding, which is associated with anemia. So that's a very brief rundown of the benefits for women of breastfeeding. Now, rights, the issue at hand. In the United States, as opposed to most countries in the world, we state our rights in a negative manner. I want to thank many other people for these concepts because I had to learn them. We basically say that the Bill of Rights articulates that negative rights is stated in that Congress is prohibited from passing laws that restrict freedoms. So they can't restrict the freedoms, thereby we protect rights. So it's kind of a negative way of protecting rights. The positive way of stating it is how the UN and most countries in Europe anyway stated, is that people have the rights to the highest attainable standards and they work from there. So rather than saying you can't deny anybody a right to something that's good, which is what we say in the United States, the rest of the world states it, people have the right to the highest attainable good. Now, does that make any difference in programming? Not necessarily, but nonetheless, the rhetoric is that we are striving for the best as opposed to that we can't restrict the best. Now, the major issue that we're dealing with, of course, with breastfeeding is what happens when the obligation to satisfy the rights of one person may be perceived to clash with the rights of another person, as Paige outlined. Well, let's get some of the statements down. The Convention on the Rights of the Child states, to ensure that all segments of society, in particular parents and children, are informed, have access to education, and are supported in the use of basic knowledge, which includes number two on the list, is the advantages of breastfeeding. Then we get back to gender reality. He says, I've read everything there is to know about breastfeeding, now it's up to you. And as we know, the reality of male parent mothering still has a way to go. And certainly breastfeeding is something that males are not capable of doing. So we don't have this complete equality. There are things that are innately female that should be respected, supported, and let me come back to the word respect, because at the International Meeting on the Rights of Women that was held in Beijing about 14 years ago, the word mother did not show up. So the right to be the best mother, it was simply dismissed by the international feminist community at that time. And we actually had a pre-meeting on women as mothers, not women as men, because the entire meeting was about women achieving men's roles. And one of the things we're working on in our conferences is to get past that and looking at the more recent feminism that respects that what we are as women is also part of feminism and deserves as much, if not more, respect in seeking feminist rights. Okay, the case of breastfeeding is one where there's easy to see that there might be conflict between the rights of the women to do all the things that women have the right to do and the rights of the baby. Now, children have the right to adequate nutrition by the Convention on the Rights of Child, and that's, won't go into that in more detail, but women also have the right under CEDAW and other conventions to equal opportunities, information, and choices, whether in the formal or the non-formal sector, which goes into household work. Now, I have four slides that deal with how can the tensions be resolved. And at first, some of the tensions. Well, promotion of women's rights and promotions of children's rights are usually complementary goals because a lot of the things women strive for have to do with protection of children. But efforts to link the two sets of rights may be viewed as having the practical effect of subordinating women's rights to children's rights. Okay. Programming that seeks to improve women's life as a conduit to fulfill the rights of children can reinforce women's disempowerment. So we have this sort of conundrum where we want the rights to do the best for our children, but if that is how the right is construed, then it can really disempower women. So there's this tension between children's rights and women's rights, and the possibility that efforts to promote the best interests of the child could actually conflict with women's full equality. So, how do we frame this then, both as a women's and children's right? The Convention on the Rights of the Child and the Conventions and CEDAW indicate that parents' decision-making should be governed by the best interests of the child. So we do have that overall parental own, if you will, responsibility. And CEDAW protects the right of women to full development and advancement. Gender-neutral laws and policies simply are not sufficient to protect the rights of women as mothers, as full participants in the whole construct of the family, and not being just the duty bearer. We have to go beyond that equality issue. So these conventions place substantial obligations, therefore, on those who are the parents are responsible to the child, the community is responsible to the parents, and if you follow the convention up through the socio-ecological model, if you will, they place substantial obligations on the state parties, which means the country, the government, to enable accommodation of childbearing and child-rearing roles. This is not viewed entirely this way in the United States. We do not see our governments stepping forth to protect parenting rights. We do not see our government stepping forth and being the first to say, we need to empower women to breastfeed. We need to create that environment. In our country, it kind of works the opposite way around. We are striving from the bottom to seek the support from the top, and that is because of the way our law is written. In contrast, CEDAW defines maternity as a societal function. In CEDAW, it's fully respected that this role of women deserves to be supported fully and enabled fully by the community and by the government, and in principle by the state as a whole. This way of looking at it is respected in Europe, which is perhaps why they have up to 2 years maternity leave, because the state feels that it has the responsibility to ensure the best functionality and beginning of life for the next generation. The Convention on the Rights of the Child, children requirement on states to render the appropriate assistance to parents. Again, the states are required to render appropriate assistance to parents in the performance of their child-rearing responsibilities. The obligations placed on both parents by both of these conventions can be entry points to promoting discussion about the roles of fathers in child rearing in a manner that challenges traditional gender norms. And I think this next one is where we're kind of at now. To ensure that women and children's rights are mutually reinforced and reinforcing requires that we have to confront a lot of social assumptions about the appropriate roles and emphasize community and state responsibility for care of children. Now, we're not talking about society and the state taking over child care, not at all. What these conventions clearly state is that the state, if it serves our society, that the state is responsible to enable appropriate parenting. So just to reiterate kind of what this all says, if you start with the interests of the child, women and mothers are the first duty bearers. This is how the rights construct works. But for every duty bearer, there are those responsible to ensure that she is able or he is able to carry out that duty. So the family is responsible for fully enabling and supporting the mother and the father to be the best parents they could be. The community is responsible to the family. The national policies are responsible to the community. And the international policy, of course, is responsible to the states. To recap, the rights approach of programming, if you want to develop your programming with rights approach, ensures that the child is at the center, recognizes that the mother and the family is the immediate duty bearer, but that they may lack the capacity. The capacity can be information, the capacity could be support, the capacity could be maternity leave, recognizes that the state is a duty bearer, and we do have programs that support this kind of thinking. The Code of Marketing of Breast Milk Substitutes, Baby Friendly, but are these supported by regulation? In summary, women's rights, respected and supported by the state, are fundamental to the fulfillment of children's rights. So our major findings from this are just three. Breastfeeding is part of the reproductive continuum, and as such should be protected under reproductive rights approaches and partnering. Major finding two is that given that breastfeeding is a public health imperative and a women's responsibility because nobody else can do it, both rights and socio-ecological constructs require community and political support that create an enabling environment for women to understand the importance of breastfeeding and to succeed if this is her choice. The final finding is that the ultimate responsibility from enabling women to breastfeed lies at the national level in the global rights construct, and therefore failure to breastfeed is not a woman's failure. And this whole concept of guilt and mommy wars is very much a U.S. construct. It's not a woman's failure, but it's a national failure, and it's a national failure with life-threatening consequences. Thank you very much for coming on this little trip with me.
Thanks, man.